Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Turning Towards Life. This is Lizzie and Justin. This is a third space project, and we are here for the ongoing, continuing conversation with these extraordinary sources that we find each week, each Sunday. We do this live together, and you might be listening here on Facebook or on Instagram or on any of the podcast platforms. And all there is really to say is a huge big welcome to you, and also hello, Justin. And we're recording this just after New Year in the UK, and Happy New Year to everybody as well. It's 2022. My gosh, that's the first I've said that. 2022. And we've got this really beautiful poem that, Justin, you've brought for us today.
Thank you, Lizzie. Good morning, everybody. Happy New Year. Welcome to this conversation. Whether it may not be New Year 2022, of course, by the time you listen to this, it might be New Year 2029 or something. The way that these conversations persist, but you're welcome with us. So welcome to be here, whatever date or time or way that you're with us, whether you're watching or listening, all of that. Before we get into this source, Lizzie, we haven't for a long time said anything about third space that this whole conversation comes from. And this poem that is our source, the spring, the life spring of this conversation we're going to have. I'm pretty sure this came to us because one of the graduates of our professional coaching program posted it in the ongoing alumni community that has come out of our programs. So first of all, I just want to say to whoever it was, thank you. I can't remember who brought this to us. But I wanted to honour for a moment before we read that our conversation, Lizzie, comes out of something much bigger, which is a group of people and a whole community of people who are dedicated to being of service to one another, to other people in the world, mostly through coaching and through teaching and through writing and through expressing and through bringing ourselves and bringing one another out in our fullness and bringing out people's goodness. And I just wanted to honour that was what had given rise to our conversation, and to say to any of you who are, particularly any of you who are new, who are with us, this conversation, of course, you can find out about Turning Towards Life on our Facebook group and on our website, which is turningtowards.life. But if you're interested in third space and everything that flows from it, you can go and check out wearethirdspace.org. where you'll find everything that we're up to, all the programs and beautiful resources, poems, imagery, things to read, things to think about, things to feel about. And the only other thing to say about that is, if you are listening in early January 2022, we have an opportunity coming up in February to join our professional coaching course students for a day and receive some free coaching from them as part of their learning, and as a wonderful way of finding out about our work. So that is in early February. I'm actually going to say the dates before we go on. It's on Saturday the 5th of February 2022, and you can go to wearethirdspace.org and click on the calendar of events to find out about it. So we're going to turn to this source, which you can find in our Facebook group, on our website, with a podcast, all of those places. And it's called What You Missed That Day You Were Absent From Fourth Grade. Mrs. Nelson explained how to stand still and listen to the wind, how to find meaning in pumping gas, how peeling potatoes can be a form of prayer. She took questions on how not to feel lost in the dark. After lunch, she distributed worksheets that covered the ways to remember your grandfather's voice. Then the class discussed falling asleep without feeling you had forgotten to do something else, something important, and how to believe the house you wake up in is your home. This prompted Mrs. Nelson to draw a chalkboard diagram detailing how to chant the psalms during cigarette breaks and how not to squirm for sound when your own thoughts are all you hear. Also, that you have enough. The English lesson was that I am is a complete sentence. And just before the alarm bell, afternoon bell, she made the math equation look easy, the one that proves that hundreds of questions and feeling cold and all those nights spent looking for whatever it is that you lost and one person add up to something.
What you missed that day you were absent from fourth grade. Mrs. Nelson explained how to stand still and listen to the wind, how to find meaning in pumping gas, how peeling potatoes can be a form of prayer. She took questions on how not to feel lost in the dark. After lunch, she distributed worksheets that covered ways to remember your grandfather's voice. Then the class discussed falling asleep without feeling you had forgotten to do something else, something important, and how to believe the house you wake in is your home. This prompted Mrs. Nelson to draw a chalkboard diagram detailing how to chant the psalms during cigarette breaks and how not to squirm for sound when your own thoughts are all you hear. Also, that you have enough. The English lesson was that I am is a complete sentence. And just before the afternoon bell, she made the math question look easy. The one that proves that hundreds of questions and feeling cold and all those nights spent looking for whatever it was you lost and one person add up to something.
Thanks, Lizzie. I think this is the most remarkable poem. And I felt so moved reading it and hearing you read it. And Lizzie, the reason I think it's remarkable, the reason I get so excited about it, and I really am excited about it, is somehow what Brad Modlin has managed to do is to remind us about all the things that are really, really important, that one way or another we find ways of discounting and discarding and judging as somehow as intrusions on the important work of being a person. I really noticed this about myself, that there is something of me, maybe the best way to say this is there's something of me that longs for every single part of this poem. To listen to the wind, for peeling potatoes to be a form of prayer, not something I just have to get through on the way to the important stuff. I notice how often I feel lost and lost in the dark and judge that as there being something wrong. And for me, remembering my grandfather's, yes, it is my grandfather's voice really matters. It's deeply moving. So I could go on and read my way all the way through every single one of these. But I suppose the thing that I'm really curious about is that we need words like this. There's something that happens for many of us which throws all of these experiences and very, very ordinary and very sacred aspects of life that sort of puts them in the discard pile, like, I ought not to be attending there. If I were a real person, I'd be attending to being liked by other people, or having this or that stuff, or being better than someone else, or getting known, or something like that, or even, frankly, being a good person, or getting good marks, or all of that becomes sort of like the central thing. And then these things become, each of them for us, become either what we won't talk about, or what we consider, somehow some part of us considers, to be trivial or meaningless or a distraction. So I want to learn how not to squirm for sound when my own thoughts are all I hear. In fact, I realize that often my own thoughts are all I'm hearing. that all of our questions and feeling cold and all of those nights spent looking for what we've lost and one person add up to something. So I'm just wondering about how it is we lose all of that and what a relief it is for someone, anyone else to say, it's okay, all of this matters.
I'm also moved, Justin, by the title of the poem, given all that you're saying, because there is a feeling when we hear these things read, for me, where you think, well, of course. And so the fact that, oh, it's because I missed a day at school, that's what happened. You know, it's like it must be somewhere. Someone must have told us this stuff, and they probably didn't. And yet it feels like they should have done. You know, I often reflect and think, my goodness, there's so much of how to be a person and have feelings and be sad or find something difficult or be extra joyful and not know what to do with oneself. Like, there's so many things that never got spoken about in the way that we were told about life in the systems that we grew up in, the ones I grew up in anyway. They didn't have much at all by the way of human conversation. And so to have this said as if it was, oh, you just missed this day in fourth grade. I'm not sure what fourth grade means, but it's being a child, I'm imagining. It feels like, oh yeah, of course, it was just the day I missed, rather than it was completely absent from the whole situation. So I'm really in appreciation in this moment of how much gets missed out in the kind of common conversations that we have when we're learning to understand what it is to be a human and to be in this world. And that there's someone attending to some of those things feels really important. And the relief I know that I have in our conversations, Justin, and also in many other ways where I hear people either, you know, speaking or there's writing or songs even that kind of disclose something of being human that isn't, that's somewhere in the shadows or that's just not talked about. I feel so relieved. And so I think that's a really big part of being human for me, is to disclose the things that people don't really talk about and then let that hang in the air as a place that someone else can also feel accepted in or de-shamed in, or like that doesn't have to be in the shadow anymore. It's normal. Like, we all feel lost sometimes. There's no need to pretend that's not happening and push it away and do a load of compensatory things because that conversation is too hard to have because it feels too difficult. And so I feel like that's part of this whole conversation, Justin, as well, is that we stand for and we speak into and live from a place where the things that are lesser said in the world get brought into normalness, normal conversation, so that we can feel like, falling to sleep with that, you know, for me, the falling to sleep with thinking that you've got something to do is kind of pervasive in all kinds of other ways too, like being somewhere and thinking I should be somewhere else, but I've just forgotten it. Like this kind of panic almost of, I'm sure there's something I've forgotten, or I'm sure there's somewhere I'm supposed to be or someone I'm supposed to be meeting or talking to, and I don't know what that is. And for that to be something that's like, oh yeah, me too, that I get it, feels really, really important. And also I think what's in this poem as well is those small, unnoticed, sacred things, like our grandfather's voices. You know, it could be whoever's voice, but you know, the sense of our ancestry and the people who've gone before us, we tend to just, you know, move on, move into life. And of course, there's so much richness behind us that we don't turn towards often enough to receive. So I'm feeling really like this is a poem for bringing things out of the shadows and de-shaming and normalizing and saying hello to things that are just really present in our lives, but somehow in the world they don't get welcomed.
Yeah, I love this way you're bringing, of talking about it, Lizzie. It's awakening something in me, and it's reminding me of something. Gosh, I need reminders of things because I forget. I think that's the ordinary way of being a human, that the commitment in this conversation and the commitment in the work that we do, but also I know each of our and many other people's deep commitment in life is to bring into the center what's otherwise pushed to the margins. And this very ordinary language of saying hello and welcome, you know, welcome to peeling potatoes and welcome to feeling lost in the dark and welcome to those times when the only thing we can hear is our own thoughts crashing around inside us. And it really struck me whilst you were talking that there's a sort of there's the making ordinary of this that you were speaking about, how important it is to make ordinary this human experience. And what that awoke in me was this really strong feeling that all of this is sacred. And that the experience, the ordinary everyday feelings, meanings, confusions, difficulties of being a person are sacred. And that there's something very, very rich and kind and life-giving that comes from de-shaming, as you said, and bringing into the light and honoring in ourselves, but also honoring in one another. The moment we can say to someone else, gosh, I really see you. I see that you feel this way. I see that you feel lost. I see that it's hard to wake up in your own home feeling like you're at home. That's a lot of what we're here for, is to witness that in one another and to honor that in one another and to dignify that in one another. And you got me thinking about, well, how is it that that's not what happens? And I think what it is, one way of talking about it is that, and we've talked about this so many times about wider culture, that the culture of the world has been for a long time that first person experience, that what we actually experience is not really trustworthy, that what's trustworthy are facts and numbers and measurements. And so if you're in fourth grade, which is about 9 or 10 years old in the UK, we're already in many contexts much more interested in what grades you got in your tests than how you feel about maths. And when we become adults and know we're working somewhere or raising a family or trying to earn some money, or we go that way because that's what the culture tells us. It tells us that the actual experience, with the sacred experience of being a human, in fact, the most miraculous something in the universe, is that it is possible for us to experience anything. That we're conscious beings and that we experience has, by our wider culture, been relegated to the margins. Experience, the depth of our experience, is kind of irrelevant. It's a distraction from measuring things and producing things and all those kind of things. And of course, measuring and producing and all of that matter in all kinds of ways. The everyday, ordinary welcome to the sacred moment by moment experience of being a person, the loss of it for us, I think, is it's a great wrench. It's a great rupture. And there's such healing in exactly what you said, which is making ordinary that which is ordinarily discounted, honoring that which is ordinarily in the background, but is actually it's the minute by minute most central truth of our being humans, is that we're experiencing all of this all of the time.
Gosh, Justin, you're talking about experiencing and how that's so excluded, you know, that the matter of experiencing, the topic of, you know, what are you experiencing right now? And you talked about exams, and I was envisaging when I was at school, we used to have to queue up in the kind of gym changing rooms to go into the big hall and all sit in these big lines with these desks that didn't have anywhere you could hide any papers, and it was all the desks were exactly as distance apart from each other, and it was all lined up. And what I remember about that is not what the content of the papers were or what I did or what I had learned, but what I felt standing in that line, walking into that place, sitting down, thinking, how am I going to do this? And it's so interesting to look at what I remember about things versus what I didn't, and match that up with what the point was in my being there according to the system. You know, I really have no idea what those exams were about. I mean, I could probably rattle off the subjects, but no concrete sense really of what I did. But I do remember very strongly what it was like to be there. And yet that's not something that ever was disclosed or included in any conversation about being there. And as you were talking, so many thoughts like that were going on about experiencing and what things were like and how it was to be somewhere and what's it like to be me. And I think because that has got excluded so much, it's hard to face that. I think it's like, you know, when I think about the sitting practice, Justin, that we know, where we simply sit and wonder and experience and allow our experience to be central rather than something that's habitually kind of pushed away, but we wonder what it's like. That the central question I always have in that, and I've found myself always asking, and I haven't changed it for lots of years, is what's it like to be me? How is it to be this one in this body, in this experience, with this particular life? And I've always noticed these things happening, which is, first of all, it's really hard to stay in that question. It's really hard, which is why it has to be a practice and a returning and a keeping on coming back to it. Because there's all kinds of distractions and thoughts and wonderings and wanting to run from my experience and not really having been trained to be with my experience, but to flee from it and to do something to counter the sadness or the feeling of lack or worry. Whatever is arising, mostly the world has taught me just to do something, to buy something, to eat something, to run, to distract myself. And so it remains a really hard question to stay with, which is, what's it like to be me right now? How is it to experience being human in this place right here? And right next to the fact that it's really hard, is also that it's completely compelling. Like, that question is deeply interesting to me because it's so unanswerable and yet feels like I could drink in the response to it forever. And that if I don't do that, if I don't really wonder what it's like to be this one in my experience of being human, it's like the foundations of the point of being a person get completely missed. So I don't know, without that, I don't know what the point is somehow. Like if I don't experience myself, in being myself, and all I am is a kind of human performer or a human completer or a human doer, it feels like a hollow kind of experience and a worrying experience. You know, like I feel concerned about myself if I'm not wondering what this one is about and what it's like to breathe and what it is to experience life just as me and be able to talk about that. If I can't do that, it feels like something's really strange. Like it's just like do die or something. And so to try and infuse my life with a sense of my being, a sense of my what I am, what being I am, in my particular essence of self, whatever that is, knowing there's never an answer, but being willing and open to wonder into the question of wondering what I am, what it's like to be me, feels so important and central, so that I actually am in my experience of life and that I can cultivate a relationship to my experience rather than push it away.
This is so important. Lizzie, as you're talking, it's reacquainting me with what feels to me like feels in myself to be a like a giant rupture that we inflict on ourselves and on one another. And the rupture is to say the way that we experience things is somehow irrelevant or a distraction. And you're making such a powerful and beautiful case for honoring the unique experience that we each are. And in a way, it seems to me that what we each are is, I think it's David White who says that we are each a unique horizon, a sort of a meeting point between consciousness and the world. And we're each a unique one of those. There'll never be another Lizzie. There'll never be another one who is you, and there'll be never be another one who is me. And so what's arising here in our own experience is it's a treasure. It's not a distraction. It's not a falsehood. It is the foundations of what it is to be a human, and like you said, not a machine of some kind. We're not mindless machines. There are some who would argue that we are, that with our consciousness, our experience is some kind of illusion. And it seems to me that's exactly the wrong way around. But yes, our experience can mislead us about this and that. Of course it can. But it's fundamentally is that to be a human conscious being is to be one who experiences. But it also really struck me whilst you're speaking that the consequence of our treating our own experience as if it were irrelevant is that it's very easy to treat other people's experience as if it's irrelevant too. So if you're hurting or joyful, if you're loving or excited, if you're confused or lost, to the extent to which I'm treating myself as if I were a production machine, and discounting and not honoring and dignifying and sanctifying my own experiences, also to the extent to which I'm likely to be doing that to you. And I think that's a tragedy. I mean, it's an absolute tragedy, because we and everyone around us are these extraordinary consciousnesses, can't even say it, one-off, unique, experience, sentient, conscious experiences of life. So, and that's where we come to the last line of Brad Modlin's poem. What would it be if we were to really orient in the way that you're saying, in the way that a simple daily sitting practice, which is sitting and being with our experience, what it would be if we took the hundreds of questions and feeling cold and all those nights that we spend looking for what we've lost, and each one of us as something. And it's so close to us all the time. It's like It's like the glasses we wear on our noses, and like we see through it, but it's right here. It's not over the sea or over the mountains to turn towards and dignify and sanctify and honor and love and what's the word, rejoice in that we experience whatever it is. And it's not over the sea and over the mountains for us to do that for one another. And yet from around fourth grade, most of us are taught very, very strongly again and again and again and again that that is what's irrelevant. The good news about it is that it's not hard to start including that, despite all of the efforts that there are around us that we've made to exclude. The act of turning towards is, in a way, is very simple.
Yeah, it strikes me, Justin, it's easy. It's simple because it's here. It's possible to say, this is the way I'm experiencing this. We can have language for it. And we might need to learn language too, but the experience is here. And we can just begin speaking about it. And I think, Justin, I think one of the things I feel really dedicated to is finding that there are spaces where we can have a go and that we don't have to perform and get something right, but that we can wander into something just as we do here and let an articulation arise amongst friends, amongst friendly audience members, amongst community, where we can have a go at saying and expressing, and all of it's welcome. I just think, it just feels to me in this moment, I feel the value in that so strongly, that we could be in community, in service of being present to our experience and finding shared language so that we can be connected in it and welcome it. And then I get to thinking about what a kind of ripple effect that might have on the rest of our lives if that's what we're receiving. How might that shift our experience as we aren't in that place, but we're in the ordinariness of our everyday? It's very beautiful.
Well, I know that's what we've got ourselves both dedicated to, Lizzie, and many, many other people in the world. And it's what Third Space is dedicated to. Too. And I'm so glad to be in this conversation. Thank you, everyone who's with us. We're going to end for today. And we will be back, all being well, next Sunday for the 200th and something one of these. And may this new year bring much goodness.
Thank you, Justin. Thanks, everybody. See you next week.
Bye, everyone.